This is New Media B on OWWR Old Westbury. I'm Anthony Bogardowski.
And I am Alyssa Rosano. We have news from five nations today: South Korea, Pakistan, Italy, Somalia, the United Kingdom, and sports media news from the continent of Africa.
From South Korea, K-pop expert Stephanie Casella has our K-pop update.
Have you heard about the virtual stars of K-pop? Can AI-generated pop stars keep the fans happy? What's the downside to virtual stardom? Is the future of music in the metaverse?
From Pakistan, we have news about censorship in Pakistan.
My co-host Anthony Bogardowski will report on press freedom in Pakistan. How is the government of Prime Minister Shabazz Sharif treating the news media? Can you have a democracy with limited freedom of the press?
From Italy, my co-host Alyssa Rosano is on the Italian Media Beat for New Media Beat.
Who is reading the papers in Italy? Old people? Young people? Is readership growing, or is everyone going online for their news? Will the next generation buy a newspaper or just check social media?
From the UK, Jalog McCoy has news about Russell Brand's troubles with the government, fans, and social media.
Comedian Russell Brand's problems continue. Should he be allowed to profit from his social media accounts after being accused of sexual abuse and harassment?
From Africa, Elijah Bailey is ready to talk about sports media. African football is big.
How will fans in Africa watch their football?
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York, College at Old Westbury.
K-pop, Stephanie Casella. Stephanie is our new media beat K-pop expert. What's new in the world of K-pop? Have you heard about the new virtual K-pop group? Do K-pop stars have to be human? Will fans accept these new virtual K-pop idols? What do the human pop stars think about this new virtual competition? With the future of pop music playing in the metaverse, Stephanie, what is a virtual K-pop group?
A virtual K-pop band is a K-pop band that has all virtual members. Virtual bands have no human members, so they have to be created using artificial intelligence, AI. This advanced technology has made the creation of these four girls, known as MAVE, possible. According to the Korea Times, comprised of Zena, Sue, Tyra, and Marty, MAVE is challenging the very fabric of the entertainment industry, capturing global attention since debuting with their album Pandora's Box in January, not just for their music, but also for their stunning visuals. The semicolons in their names represent a link that connects two different worlds. MAVE is a balanced combination of K-pop elements and technology, which makes this group stand out in virtual entertainment. Another virtual K-pop band, PLAVE, is comprised of five AI-generated boy members, including Noah, Bambi, Yejun, Yunho, and Hamin. According to K-pop stars, all five handsome idols who came out of comics are songwriters who can also compose their own songs, as well as all-rounders who are skilled in singing, dancing, and rapping. These unique idols are capable of being songwriters, singers, and dancers, similar to human idols but on a virtual plane.
How were these virtual K-pop bands created?
At first glance, MAVE may look human, but in reality, their figures exist only in a virtual setting. MAVE is more natural-looking thanks to new tools and artificial intelligence that developers used to create facial expressions and small details like streaks in hair, the viewers say. With the aid of an AI voice generator, its members can speak four languages: Korean, English, French, and Bahasa. But they can't speak in response to prompts and have to rely on scripts prepared by humans. The group's voices, heard in the debut single Pandora and the choreography in the music video, were created by human performers and processed by motion capture and real-time 3D rendering technologies. PLAVE was also created by AI tech, but in a different way. According to KoreaBoo, unlike some other virtual artists, the way that PLAVE uses AI is similar to how VTubers stream with an animated character in place of their body. This allows members to do live streaming where they can dance, play games, and interact with fans in real time. The actual singers for each of the five members, Noah, Bambi, Yejun, Yunho, and Hamin, are aren't publicly known, though there are rumors that they include former members of disbanded K-pop groups. In other words, the members of PLAVE are avatars that exist on a virtual platform, which is similar to what VTubers, virtual YouTubers, do when they don't want to show their real faces. Nonetheless, the singers that provide the voices for these virtual characters are humans.
How popular have these virtual idols become?
Virtual K-pop groups have been gaining more popularity in South Korea, building up to becoming a global phenomenon. The Korea Economic Daily reports that MAVE has lured more than 25 million viewers on YouTube with the music video of its hit Pandora within 7 months of its release. Previously, it was only possible for top K-pop artists such as Blackpink to see this level of viewer numbers in such a short period. This virtual K-pop girl group has become on par with groups that have human members. PLAVE has definitely been getting recognition in South Korea as well, considering Korean netizens are open to exploring both male and female groups. According to Koreaboo, Asturam has already made nearly 55,000 sales, impressive for a brand new AI group. And recently, their two songs even ranked at the top of the Buzz music chart in a sudden leap that has their fans elated. The overwhelming popularity of PLAVE's new music has produced outstanding results and even captured the hearts of fans fairly new to the K-pop world. For New Media Beat, I'm Stephanie Casella. Back to you, Alyssa.
Thanks, Stephanie. Let's talk about media in Pakistan. The Islamic Republic of Pakistan is a tough place to be a journalist, especially if you were a supporter of former Prime Minister Imran Khan, who was arrested in May. The current Prime Minister, Shehbaz Sharif, is the younger brother of another former Prime Minister and leader of the Pakistan Muslim League, Nawaz Sharif. The government of Shehbaz Sharif keeps the news media on a short leash. My co-host, Anthony Bogorowski, has a report for New Media Beat. Anthony, can you give us a recent example of how the press are treated in Pakistan?
A recent example of how press freedom has been treated in Pakistan is the censorship and harassment faced by media outlets and journalists during and after the removal of Prime Minister Imran Khan in April 2022. Following Khan's removal, the Pakistan Electronic Media Regulatory Authority took action against several media organizations, resulting in suspension of news channels and punitive measures against journalists. This crackdown raises concerns about the ability of the media to report independently and hold the those in power accountable, exemplifying the ongoing challenges to press freedom in Pakistan.
What's the deal with Pakistan's restriction of press freedom?
Pakistan has a complex history of press freedom, marked by periods of openness and severe restrictions, especially during military dictatorships. In recent years, press freedom has significantly deteriorated, with Pakistan ranking the 150th out of the 180 nations in the 2023 World Press Freedom Index. Journalists face numerous challenges, including threats and harassment. The government's tight control over media, censorship, and the recent removal of Prime Minister Imran Khan in April 2022 have led to increased censorship by regulatory authorities. Social media and digital platforms have both empowered journalists with a wider reach and provided the government with tools of monitoring and censoring online content. Laws regulating social media have been criticized for stifling free expression. It is crucial for the government to protect journalist safety, support media diversity, and promote media independence to ensure press freedom, a cornerstone of democracy, is maintained in Pakistan.
How does the government in Pakistan restrict press freedom?
Press freedom in Pakistan faces many challenges caused by the government. They often stop or limit what the media can say in traditional and digital formats, so people can hear different opinions. There are also rules from groups like the Pakistan Electronic Media Regulatory Authority that control what the media can say. These rules can make journalists afraid to report the truth. Sometimes journalists are threatened or hurt, which makes it hard for them to do their job. Big people who are friends with the government often own the media, so they control what gets reported. The government also stops foreign news channels from being shut down in Pakistan, so people have fewer places to get news. Online, the government makes rules to social media sites. They can then follow Pakistan's rules and take down anything the government doesn't like. All these problems show why it's important to have press freedom. It helps journalists tell the truth, hold powerful people accountable, and give different people sides of the story.
What are the consequences of this lack of press freedom?
The lack of press press freedom in Pakistan carries significant consequences, including limited accountability for those in power, restricted access to unbiased information, self-censorship among journalists, threats to their safety, weakened democratic institutions, economic repercussions within the media sector, damage to the city, country's international reputation, potential social unrest, the perpetuation of cultural censorship, and the decline in public interest and trust in the media. These consequences collectively hinder the country's progress, transparency, and the ability of the public to make informed decisions, underscoring the vital role of press freedom in a healthy democracy. The suppression of press freedom not only stifles the watchdog function of the media, but also perpetuates a climate of fear, where journalists are hesitant to investigate and report on critical issues. The climate of fear can have a chilling effect on free speech, creativity, and social progress, ultimately hindering the country's development and the standing on the world stage. For New Media B, I'm Anthony Brodowski. Back to you, Alyssa.
Thank you, Anthony. Is there a future for the newspapers of Italy? Are readers still buying newspapers? Are young Italians getting their news on their phones and social media instead?
Global Media News. Global Media News on OWWO, Old Westbury Web Radio.
Let's talk about the newspaper industry in Italy with my co-host, Alyssa Rosano. Are there lots of newspapers in Italy? Who owns the newspapers in Italy? Are they profitable? Are they gaining or losing readers? Have the Italian newspapers gone digital to try to keep their readers, even if they no longer read papers in print? Alyssa, what are some of the most popular newspapers in Italy? Do they have a lot of readers?
Yes, some of the most popular newspaper groups in Italy refer to the Jedi Group, which publishes major newspapers such as La Repubblica and La Stampa. The major sales tend to be magazines such as Paranoma and Donna Moderna, the Mondadori Group. Most of these newspapers are in the Italian language, so it is hard for newcomers to read them in Italy. The country does not produce many English-language newspapers, although they do have specialty foreign bookstores in big cities in Italy, such as Rome, that can carry major English-language broadsheets from overseas.
Do Italians use newspapers to get their news?
Although newspapers aren't used as they once were, some Italians still refer to newspapers as their source of news. Italians use two different kinds of newspapers, both national and regional. The two main newspapers in Italy are Corriere della Sera and La Repubblica. Many Italians use online websites to access their Italian newspapers. This access is free information, and Italians are provided in-depth articles.
What happened to the sales of Italian newspapers?
In the last year, only 12% of Italians were reported buying a newspaper subscription. Since then, newspaper subscriptions have declined massively. Since the drop of purchases of newspapers in Italy, consumers must get their news elsewhere. Even those who buy a subscription aren't using the source as much as they should. They refer to television as a better source to get their news from.
What's going on with major Italian newspaper publishers?
The Italian publishing groups continue to offload their traditional news outlets to smaller publishers. The publisher group Jedi sold the Renew-owned investigative magazine El Espresso and several local newspapers. In February of 2023, publishers were faced with the possibility of further sales of local newspapers, and journalists at La Repubblica went on strike. New Media Beat, I'm Alyssa Rosano. Back to you, Anthony.
Thanks, Alyssa. Let's head to China. Deborah Flambaugh is in Studio A with us today to talk about the spicy milk clothing style. Deborah, what is the spicy milk style?
Spicy milk style is a style of clothing for children in China. It is clothing that is made for kids that is a mimic of adults' clothing. It has, in the way that it is made in a sexualized style. For example, tube tops, pearly necklaces, and cut-out skirts.
How is the use of social media connected to this new trend?
The use of social media is connected to this new trend, since when parents are researching clothing on Weibo and Douyin, those are social media platforms in China, they see the clothing and they think, oh, that'll be good for my child, and they buy it.
What does this clothing trend show about the change in China's social norms?
It shows that the change in China's social norms has went from conservative clothing that protects the body to clothing that is sexualized, that gets people to think of their features.
Why is China's government worried about this trend?
China's government is worried about this trend because it means that the morals of the population are changing. China has normally been a very conservative country, and the idea has always been that women wear clothing that does not accentuate their bodies. This change shows that people's morals are changing to be more interested in sexualized activities. For New Media Beat, I'm Deborah Flambaum. Back to you, Anthony.
Thank you, Deborah. Should celebrities accused of sexual harassment be allowed to make money from their internet accounts? Some members of parliament in the UK don't think so. What does comedian Russell Brand think about this campaign to demonetize his social media accounts?
Controversy in the United Kingdom over what should happen to celebrities who have been accused of sexual abuse. What are the rules in the UK? Are there rules? Should social media platforms like YouTube, Twitter, and Rumble allow stars under suspicion of sexual abuse to profit from their followers on social media? Who should decide? The platforms? The government? The courts? Dalal, who is Russell Brand and what has he been accused of recently?
Brand is a citizen of the United Kingdom. He's very well known for his career in comedy. He also has plenty of success in acting and is very well known in Hollywood. As of recent, Brand has started a new career in podcasting, which is centered around cultural and political commentary. Now, in regards to why Brand has faced demonetization, is due to the fact that he is currently facing sexual assault allegations that tie back to a couple of decades ago. He has a few allegations. It's about four allegations. Social media platforms like YouTube has actually completely demonetized him once news came out. He hasn't actually faced any criminal investigations.
Is this attack on free speech?
Personally, I believe it is. So certain platforms like Twitter and Rumble actually has put out statements saying that they are not going to demonetize him, and they believe that it is an attack on his free speech, especially for someone that actually has not faced any criminal. He has not been convicted. He has not faced any criminal trial, and this is pretty much just off of word of mouth and through mainstream media.
Football in Africa with Elijah Bailey. Sports media is an enormous global business, and broadcast rights for football are worth billions. Who controls the right to broadcast football to fans in Africa? Who are the major players in this big business? The Confederation of African Football, or CAF, is the most important sports organization in Africa. A Qatari media group called BN purchased the rights to broadcast CAF games to millions of fans across Africa. The contract was supposed to last for 12 years, but in September that deal was broken. Why did CAF break its broadcast agreement with BN? Will football fans in Africa be able to see the big games now that CAF has broken the contract with BN? Who will control the broadcast rights in African football? What happens when a deal gets canceled and broadcast rights are in doubt? Elijah, let's get started with the basics. What do we need to know about the Confederation of African Football, and what do we need to know about this Qatari media group called BN to understand this news story?
Hi, Alyssa. Thank you. So the CAF is the Confederate African Football Association in Africa. They're responsible for all of the football that is broadcast. They have primarily used BN, which is a Qatari-based broadcasting network. They have used them for years to broadcast African football. And recently, they have broke ties due to them feeling like BN owes them around US $80 million. BN responds to that allegation saying that there was number issues, but that those number issues have mostly been due to the postponement of rescheduling a lot of men's African Cup national tournaments due to COVID-19 and weather.
Describe the fan base of African football.
The fan base of African football, which is soccer in the U.S., has grown through over the years. African football is something that is now being watched in more places than just Africa. Like the CAF deal with BN was able to be broadcast in 40 countries, including the Middle East and North America, Asian Pacific regions, France, and the U.S.
What happened with the Confederation of African Football, CAF, and their broadcasting contract?
So with their broadcasting contract, they felt like they weren't getting the return that they believe they should have get. They also are like one of the only deals where they solely gave partnership to one broadcasting, like how the U.S. does, like ESPN, where they broadcast to several different broadcasters when it comes to their sports, where broadcasters share different shares of the games. So I know moving forward, the CAF wants to think about possibly having more than just one broadcaster, so they don't fall into the issue that they are right now.
Thank you, Elijah. That's all for this week. Today we heard reports from Anthony Bogorowski, Alyssa Rosano, Elijah Bailey, Stephanie Costello, Deborah Flanagan, and Jalal McCoy. For more media news and resources, check out our latest post at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.